episode 192, Putting in the Work to Make Your Dreams a Reality with Megan Minns.
Welcome to the She Did It Her Way podcast, a collective of interviews with top female entrepreneurs from around the globe who have done it their way. These women are disruptors, savvy, courageous, confident, innovative, decisive, unconventional, and humble. Our ladies have proven business models, have taken risks, and have failed only for success to follow. Join us as they share their stories, behaviors, habits, mindset, thought processes, and what it is like to be a woman who means business. And now, here's your host, Amanda Bolin.
Yay! So I'm super stoked for today's podcast episode. If you guys have been following along, we are in the middle of a six-part series leading up to the She Did It Her Way Summit, and right smack dab in the middle of this series is a wonderful gal who I have been following, and I'm just like always soaking and eating up or watching. I don't know, eating up is probably not the right word, but definitely consuming her content because it is absolutely amazing and it has changed the way that I do systems and processes in my businesses for She Did It Her Way and then my consulting practice that I have as well. And she will also be speaking at the She Did It Her Way Summit, and I am so excited to have her. And it is the lovely Miss Megan Minns. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited.
Yeah, well, I'm super pumped. And tell us what it is that you do. And then per usual, we're going to dive into your journey and how you found yourself in this entrepreneurial space.
Perfect. I can't wait to share it. So right now I offer project management services for higher level business owners. I only take a few clients. So that's kind of just a little part of my business that I do because I love organizing, and organizing projects is how I love spending my time because I'm that strange.
And you're that good at it though too.
Thank you. But so those are my services. But where I spend a lot of my time is actually helping out newer business owners and helping them get systemized, organized, and be more productive in their business. And kind of my deeper purpose in business and life really is kind of helping people realize that it's going to sound cheesy, but I'm a cheesy person. Helping people realize that they can accomplish their dreams and just encouraging them to take the action, make the commitments, and start actually doing the work to make it a reality. I'm like an eternal optimist. So whenever anyone has an idea, I'm sorry, I'm going to just attack you with all of my ideas and encouragement to help you do it.
Yeah, well, and you provide a fantastic roadmap to like do that. I mean, we'll dive more into that and I'll share some of like your YouTube videos are phenomenal. And I'm like,
thank you.
I just love how your brain works, because even with Asana, and I was telling you this a couple of weeks ago, one of your videos about how to lay out Asana for a content calendar way is just like, to me, to you, it might be simple, like, of course, this is what you do with Asana. To me, I'm like, this is mind-blowing. Like, what?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Thank you. No, I love it. I think it's interesting. We'll get into this a little bit later, but I've always been kind of a technical person. Like, I was the little kid playing computer games and building websites in elementary school. And not that that makes me any special, but I think it's just I see things a little differently than some people. And I haven't ever experienced that hang up of tech. And a lot of business owners, when they're starting out especially, get so hung up by the technology. And I think that's where I found that I can really help people, because I can take it and simplify it. And you don't have to spend hours trying to figure out how to set up your Asana or how to set up your Thinkific account or Teachable or, you know, any kind of those systems that you might be using as a business owner. I can simplify it and guide you into setting it up correctly. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of how I like to, that's the most tangible way I help people, is just getting rid of that tech overwhelm and the systems overwhelm that can be so easy to have as a business owner.
Yeah. And so helpful to scale too. Why don't you take us back then, like, at what point in your career, in your journey, did you transition into this entrepreneurship space? And what was that whole entire leap journey like?
Oh, yeah. I love talking about this too. And I don't feel like I get to talk about it very often. So it's really fun for me to kind of share this. So back in college, let me take a general step back. Yeah. I've always been like equal parts left and right brained. And so I feel like a lifelong struggle I had was like which side of that to serve. And especially growing up, I had a lot of influence to pursue like medical and be a doctor or a psychiatrist, which I was definitely interested in. I got my major in college. It was in psychology and I loved science. So I felt very torn and interested in science, but simultaneously I loved art. Like I spent my free time sketching and I was good at it and really loved the creative side of things. So I kind of always felt like I was struggling between these two sides. So I ended up pursuing psychology. So I gave into the science route, being the practical planning self. I was like, that's the stable future. Mm-hmm. So I did psychology and ended up getting a full-time job in human resources and recruiting, which was a nice blend of the creative and the, you know, process, science-y, rule-following side. That was back in summer of 2012 is when I graduated and started that full-time job. But while I was in college and kind of struggling with that creative outlet, I started a blog called Organized Meg, which is a persona I hope to revive one day.
Yeah.
But it was Organized Meg, and I just started blogging that last year of college back in 2012, and it was not like a don't look at it. It was not a good blog. Like I didn't do it well, but it kind of opened my eyes to blogging. Cause like I had said earlier, I had like built websites for random other things. And when we had Zanga, I like customized that like crazy.
Wait, what is Zanga?
Oh my gosh. It was like an old school blogging platform back when when I was like in middle school, probably.
Oh my gosh. It was
like MySpace era. It was Zanga, and you would just like post, instead of status updates, it was like microblogging, but all personal. I don't even know if that exists anymore, but it's called Zanga. And I totally like learned how to customize HTML and do CSS. Like I went crazy. And so I was always kind of messing with the web design stuff. And so I started blogging and really realized, wow, there's like blogging is a very big field right now. In 2012, I feel like it was still, to me, it was still newer, but it was actually really thriving at that time. And so it kind of opened my eyes to the online space and realizing that like there's more than just your college degree and your corporate ladder. But I didn't pursue that. I just kind of kept doing it a little bit on the side. So in summer 2012, I actually started a master's program while I got my full-time job in HR. I got a master's in organizational and human resource development. I love learning. So like I'm the person that still buys courses all the time. I'm reading books. Like I just think I'm a perpetual learner. So I wanted to keep learning, kind of going into, I thought I was going to do human resources forever. So I was like, well, if I'm going to do this forever, I want to be the best. So I'm going to get a master's. So it was this interesting time where I had a full-time job. I was getting my master's and I was kind of blogging on the side. And I honestly, I have probably 5 to 10 blog posts that I did in this whole time period because I was just messing around with the web design. Like that's every month I would like rebrand my blog that I wasn't even blogging on. And I started creating printables though, which has served me well in time since then, creating worksheets that you can print out and use. But I really, that was my status for like a year. I was just doing all of that. And it wasn't until May 2013 that I officially created MeganMins.com. Mm. And based on my love of web design and creative and kind of really starting to seek a more creative outlet, I decided to offer creative services. So I offered custom handwriting. I have decent handwriting. I am not a calligrapher, but I have good handwriting, I guess. And people would ask me to like handwrite like signs for their wedding or
oh my gosh.
I would do handwritten logos. So my logo at the time was handwritten. And so I did I did custom handwriting services, branding, and web design. And I built this like elaborate WordPress theme from scratch and just like kept messing with web design more. This is the theme of early business, is that Megan was distracted by her website all the time. But it was really interesting to kind of start this creative outlet. So I was still pursuing my master's. I still had my full-time job. And then suddenly I was actually having clients. And most of it was friends or friends of friends. So it was very organic and it wasn't a ton of clients all at once, but I kind of always had client work. And it was very interesting trying to balance it all. And I was dating at the time, but I wasn't married. And so I was definitely not, as far as like dealing with the side hustle, having a business that you're trying to build while working full time, I was not the healthiest example of how to do it. I went through phases, but I definitely would be the person that would stay up really late to work on something, or would say no to social events, or would work on the weekends. It wasn't really the healthiest, but I also was very fortunate in that time period. I could do that because I didn't have children to raise, or my social calendar wasn't like as crazy. And I don't know. So I definitely did that juggling act for, I guess, another up until January of 2014 is when I officially created my LLC. And since I was doing creative work, I named it Megan Minns Designs LLC, which I'm like, why did I ever do that? Because now I don't do design work. And I'm like, I wish it was just Megan Minns LLC instead of Megan Minns Designs. But you live and you learn. Yeah. But so I still, like, this whole time, I'm still doing creative services. And this is probably in 2014 when it started to feel harder. It started to feel like a chore. Something I loved was now feeling hard. And I think also, for me at least, creatively, I like to do creative things for myself. But when I start trying to do creative things for someone else and they have their own opinions of that creativity, it kind of started to like suck the life out of me a little bit. And I had dream clients. Like, it's not because anyone said anything mean. I think it was just having my creative work be like up for debate was like, oh, I don't like that feeling. Like, that's a little. And also, I don't know if anyone else who's listening is a designer at all, but I feel like the design world is so impressive. Like, there are so many incredibly creative, yeah, passionate, inspiring designers. And I kept feeling like I was less than. Like, I would see these other designers and their websites, and I'd be like, oh, why didn't I think of that? Or like, oh, I'm never going to be that good. It became this like very unhealthy mindset for me. And I don't think that's for everyone. That was just my experience being in this more creative area of entrepreneurship. And really what it boils down to is that that's not my zone of genius. Like, I can do web design, I can do graphic design, I can do handwritten logos, but it boils down to this realization that even though I can do those things, that's not really what I should be doing. And it was this like painful but really good aha moment, because I know so many designers that love it. So I don't want anyone to feel discouraged about that industry, because it was really like, this has all been a path of self-discovery for me. And that was a harder one for me to learn, because I think when you start a business, you kind of imagine this is the business that I'm going to do forever. And it has to be perfect, and this is it, and I can't change, and change is scary. And definitely by the end of 2014, I was having to make those realizations as like, okay, you know, I don't know if this is really where I should be spending my time. It feels really hard. It feels like a bad mindset for me. So towards the end of, 2014, I kind of tried to slow down and take on less clients and take a little bit of a break. And I'm so lucky that during this time I had a great mentor, who we were just friends, like, wasn't a paid mentorship or anything. She was just my friend, and she's been in business a lot longer than me and super successful. And we were just chatting about how I was feeling, and she opened my eyes to like reevaluating what you're doing, which sounds so basic, but I can look back now and say I was in pain then because I wasn't living in my strengths. I didn't know that in the time, in the moment. I couldn't tell that that's what was happening. She kind of brought that out of me, and we kind of boiled it back down to step zero, where she was like, okay, think about your personal life, think about your full-time job, think about everything you've ever done. Like, what are your strengths? Like, what do you actually feel really, really good at? What feels really easy to you? And when you're in your corporate job, especially, like, what are the projects that you're always doing and everyone's like so thrilled with your work? And by just asking me those few questions, I was like, oh, well, I'm always coming in and identifying areas of improvement and then creating a plan and then managing the plan and then executing parts of the plan to like make those changes. And then it was like, I'm implementing new tech especially in corporate HR, especially in 2012 and 2013, tech was very old school, and there was new software that just, you know, my managers weren't aware of. And even using Asana, which I still use, I implemented Asana at several HR jobs as a way to track candidates beyond your typical clunky application process. So it was really cool. But we were talking, and I said, I'm implementing these tech systems. I'm establishing workflows and processes. I'm organizing our files, our digital files, and managing these projects. And she was like, have you ever heard of a virtual assistant? I was like, no, I actually haven't. And so in early 2015, I officially pivoted to offering virtual assistant services. And that was a scary change, going from, I'd been doing design, you know, for 2 years basically at that point, and I didn't know if it was going to work. Like, are people going to trust that I can be a virtual assistant? So made the change, put up a new services page. I had stopped taking on new design clients before then. And shockingly, I got booked out very, very quickly, because I was still working full time. So we're talking low hours, like 5 hours a month per client, maybe 10. But I had several client slots, and they all got booked out because of Facebook groups. Because I was just in there not pitching at all, but I had been blogging through this period of time, and I had switched to Squarespace across this time, and I was using certain tech systems and tools that people just would ask a ton of questions about in Facebook groups. It was people's biggest hangup, and I just would, like, honestly spend time and help them in these Facebook groups, and it unintentionally, like, that was not, I'm not smart enough for that to be my marketing strategy. Now I know that's a marketing strategy that works. I was just trying to be helpful. And these people would be like, can I hire you? And so part of my specialty as a virtual assistant was that I was really good at tech. And that was kind of my emphasis. I'll do the basic administrative stuff too, but I can also do these technical things. And I also could do graphic design. So it's kind of this, like, all-in-one little virtual assistant. And I was amazed at the reaction, and I was amazed at how happy my clients were. And I loved doing the work, because it was finally back in my zone of genius, things I felt good about doing, things that felt easy. And I was, like, amazed how clients were like, how did you do that? Oh my gosh, this is a blast. I'd be like, I don't understand. This is so simple to me. But it was this awesome validation, and it totally made the entire, like, pain of pivoting and the fear totally, totally worth it. And so that was early 2015. Summer 2015, I launched my first online course, which was called Squarespace in One Weekend. And again, blown away by the response. And by November of 2015, I quit my full-time job. Wow. And that is just all credit to pivoting into being a virtual assistant. And I am not the type of person who takes the leap into entrepreneurship full time. Like, I was not brave. I had to have, like, money in the right place. I had to have security going forward with, like, my client workload. And I knew that by quitting my full time job, I could have, instead of 5 or 10 hours per client, I could take on a lot more time per client. And they were all open to that and excited. So in November 2015, it was crazy.
Can you break it down then too? Like, what were some of the key things that you did specifically that allowed you to be in the position of quitting your job and then knowing that you would have a successful land?
Yeah. So again, there are so many people who talk about taking the leap and quitting their job, and they just do it and trust that they'll make it work. Mm-mm. I wish I was that cool. I'm not. I had to have it all nailed down. So launching that course, and, you know, we're not talking a six-figure launch or anything. It was my first product. Launching the course several months before, though, was very, very validating in the concept that I can make money besides clients. And it was – so I think that was one critical piece where it didn't necessarily, like, provide all the savings, and, like, that wasn't the money that I was able – you know, that wasn't the biggest chunk of money, but it was a nice validation to myself that, like, okay, this will keep making sales. I can have other products in addition to services. So that was one thing. And then I'd say the other key was, for me, having those conversations with clients. Like, I had hit a wall where I was just honestly maxed out where I needed to still do, I was trying to still do good at my full-time job. You know, I wanted to be a good employee. And so knowing that I needed to be a good employee and still have a health, you know, trying to sleep and eat healthy and work out and have a social life and then have client work, I had very good boundaries for the most part about what my hourly limit was. Cause I was working hourly still. I'd have like packages, but they were hourly. So I knew like I have a limit of how many hours I'm going to commit to offering. Mm. And my clients wanted more than that. And so it was this very honest moment where I was like, I can't give you more unless I quit my full-time job. And I can't do that unless we're at this many hours. And it was just having those conversations because they were great clients in a good relationship where they said, I will meet that. Like if you leave, I agree to paying that hourly rate at that package. And so having those things lined up did it. And then also I was still dating my now husband back then. We had been together a long time. So he was with me through all of this. But we weren't engaged yet or anything. And so it was kind of this sweet spot where I didn't have to like have his permission. Not that we have that dynamic now, but like as a married person, quitting my job would be a way bigger deal than it was for me at the time where I was still technically single, you know, and it was just me providing for me. And I was very fortunate. I would have still done it had we been married, but it was just made it a little easier. But the cool thing was I had this like aha moment where I was like, what's the worst case scenario? Like, okay, here's this plan. It all seems like it's going to work out. But what's the worst case scenario? And like every single time, the worst case scenario was that I had to go get another full-time job. Like this doesn't work out. I'm not going to be able to keep being an online business owner. I need a normal job again. And it was like, that's okay. Like I like HR. I have tons of qualifications. I have a master's. And the experience I will get from being a business owner will only help me to get another job later if I need to. And so I kind of just had to accept this like, okay, the worst thing that can happen is I know what this is like. I give it a shot. I try my best and I try it for 6 months and see how I feel. Do I even like it? It also made it like less stressful because there was the possibility that I might not like it. Like maybe I don't want to be an entrepreneur and that's okay. And I kind of had that like safety net built in where it was like, okay, I think I'll like it. I want this to work, but worst case, I'll just come back in 6 months and get another HR or recruiting job at a different company. Like, great. That I can live with that. So that was the last thing. Like I had all these other, you know, my future husband was on board with it. I felt confident that the money would be there based on clients and the course that I was selling. But it was like that last thing that allowed me to feel good about it and feel super confident was that going through the what's the worst that can happen. Like the worst that's happened is all my clients fire me or I fire them or I make no sales and all of it, like no matter what the path you take, it boils down to having to get another job. And I was totally okay with that and felt that it was worth the risk. So that was the biggest difference maker for me.
Yeah. And so you did that, you said, in the end of 2015, correct?
Yeah. So the end of 2015, I was a virtual assistant and fully booked and it was awesome. And so pretty much all of 2016, that's where I was doing. I phased out graphic design offerings from my services and truly just honed in on being like a technical virtual assistant. And with some of my clients, that work really evolved into being an online business manager and project management and kind of owning that higher level of involvement with my client besides just being an administrative assistant, basically. And it was so cool to kind of have that evolution happen really naturally. And also in this year, I started releasing more downloadable products, trying to build some more passive income. And then I collaborated with one of my clients, Mariah Cause, to create Square Your Site, which is all about Squarespace templates. And it's really fun. So it's kind of cool that now I'm a service provider. I also have passive income through some of my downloadable products. And I also was able to collaborate with someone and create this like amazing product together. So 2016, I was just like thriving in that space. But any other service providers here might relate to this. I kind of lost the like, I'm the CEO of my own company vibe. Mm. I was so invested in my clients' work, which is great. You should be. But I think I like overdid it where I was like, I took on their business as my own and like totally, I was doing these things. I had a few downloadable products and I blogged a few times, you know, but I wasn't really pushing my personal brand as far as I wanted to, but I kind of just decided it was okay. Everything has its space, but entering 2017 has kind of been this other evolution where, okay, I have a profitable business. It's making money. I don't have to worry about going back to a corporate job anymore, which is amazing to say that, you know, after a year of not being in it or more. But it kind of realizing like, wait, I do want to be the CEO of my business. I do want my business to be more than just client work. I want to give more of these products. Like my community wants help with some of these, getting their business online. Like how do you buy a domain and hook it to your website and set up MailChimp, like starting from the ground up, how do you do those things? And my audience wants help with that. So I need time to help them with that. And they want to learn more about how to use Asana to really get organized. And if I'm going to help them, I need more time to create that. So where I'm at, where I've been this year, is trying to figure out how to do that. Like, what is that evolution? Where am I going? And it's been a very interesting process.
Mm. Yeah. Well, and I have some friends that are in a service-based industry similar, where they've expressed the same things, where they start to take on their client's business. And then it's that balance and question of, okay, well, wait a second. How do I make sure that while I'm still taking on my client's business, that I still make time and space for growing what it is of my own?
Yeah. And that's where, you know, when I introduced myself, I said I am a project manager. And that is really the transition. As we're recording this transition is not public yet, but by the time it goes live, it will be. And even if it's not, that's fine. It'll be very soon. But part of the transition I've made now, and my client knows about it, is really honing in on the part of this whole, you know, online business manager, tech VA, project manager. Those are kind of the three roles I've been having, and kind of realizing that the role I want to be in is the project manager space, because that's where I feel like it kind of all comes together. I get to plan the project, I get to manage it, make sure everyone has a really good experience and we achieve our goals. But I'm not the one setting up a ConvertKit opt-in or setting a funnel or testing a SamCart product or tweaking a website. And I really get to be a manager of the project and not necessarily the one doing it all. And that's kind of something I'm thrilled. Like, I love doing that. So I'm so excited to do that. But also it opens up so much more time for me that I haven't had. And so by doing that, now I can fully step into being the CEO. I can release more products. I've got so many fun plans for the whole rest of 2017 that I'm so excited to finally have the bandwidth to do. And I've had the time to kind of realize what my purpose is, realize it is helping people kind of get unstuck, go from idea to implementation, helping them actually not just create a list in Asana, but how to actually get that list done. And it's been such a fun process, but it's so crazy to look back, like we just talked through, from February of 2012, when I was just blogging terribly, you know, through all the twists and turns and the evolutions and how it's pivoted. It's so crazy, because I would have never imagined that this is where I would end up today, but it was so rewarding. And I'm a huge fan of change and pivoting and evolving. And I think as a business owner, you have to evolve and be open to that. And even though it's hard and scary, you're supposed to evolve. All businesses evolve, you know? I don't know. There's my word vomit for you.
No, I love it. And because if you don't evolve, I mean, there's value in consistency in the small things every day, whatever it might be, but there's tremendous value too in pivoting and aligning yourself with your zone of genius, or Shauna McKenzie, who's also speaking at the conference, she calls it your sweet spot, and really identifying what is it that drives your energy and how can you make it your focus in your business so that you can show up and then also just overall drive your business in that capacity too. I know my journey is definitely all over the place too, I would say. What I'm so curious, how do you plan, like, what's next? I mean, anything from, I know you like with content, how you execute it through using Asana, but one, how do you plan and brainstorm and develop your content? But then two, like, how do you plan out your goals, whether they're monthly and quarterly? I've downloaded your Excel document or Google Excel, which is amazing. But my question is like, are you already looking into 2018? And I know I watched that video too about Gary Vaynerchuk. See, now I'm going all over the place. but like,
no, you're good.
Are you, when you look at 2018, let's say if you are, if you're not, then we don't need to continue the conversation. But if you are, what is the lens that you're looking at it through? And then how do you go about breaking down, okay, this is my vision or my roadmap, into actual practical, tangible goals per like quarterly basis? Or how do you decide which goal that you want to go after so that you then can break it down into your, the amazing Google Doc that you've created?
Oh, thank you. Well, so to start off, I am not looking at 2018 yet. That doesn't mean I don't have ideas and I don't have a loose plan of where I want that to go. I definitely do. But here's the deal. It's all about knowing yourself. And if you haven't gathered, I love to plan. And this is an amazing thing, but it can also be a amazing procrastination tool. Mm. I habitually will plan as a procrastination method, whether I realize it or not. So instead of focusing on what I want to achieve the next 90 days, I'll get all consumed with what I'm going to achieve the 90 days after that, that this 90 days doesn't get done. And that's something I've had to learn. And that doesn't mean I don't set annual goals. Like, I definitely love setting long-term, I have long-term big picture goals. And I remind myself of those through, I have a dry erase board across from my desk where I have like a piece of paper that's like my biggest annual goal. For me right now, that's usually revenue based, just since I'm growing my business. That's where my head is at still. And so I'll have my sticky note on the whiteboard that's like the biggest number one thing for me that I'm working towards. And then I actually have a journaling practice. I try to do it every day where I, some people call it like affirmations or manifesting. To me, it's just, this is what makes me feel good and puts me in the right mindset. And it's definitely like writing down what I want to achieve in like that present tense. So it'll be like, I earn more than X number of dollars per month easily and happily. And it's like, I have X number of clients that I love working with and they love working with me and it's all really good. So I'll just like every morning take, you know, 2 to 5 minutes and just quickly jot down some of those things that I'm working towards at a bigger picture that aren't in a spreadsheet necessarily, you know, maybe they could be, but they're that bigger piece. So when it comes down to the actual granular stuff, I try to focus in on the 90 days. Again, usually, especially, you know, I love annual planning. So, you know, as we get nearer to November, I'll probably start really paying more attention to 2018 and the first 90 days of 2018. But I'm, like you mentioned, the Gary Vaynerchuk video I mentioned in a piece of content really recently is that September is kind of a new year and that August can be, we're not in August anymore, but when I recorded my video on that, you know, August is a great time to kind of reset and figure out what you want for the rest of the year. So I'm trying to not procrastinate by planning. And so I'm trying to stay really zeroed in on September and October. I know what's happening November, December, January. I have some loose things on my calendar that I have made sure they have a spot that I can plan around, like loosely what I want to launch and when I want to launch it. But I'm trying to just zero in on the next 2 to 3 months. And what that has meant for me is I still, right now, as of the time of recording this, I'm still doing more than project management for my clients. So I'm still doing the technical VA work. I'm still doing the online business management. We haven't fully transitioned yet into project management. And so I don't have that full freedom yet, but I'm definitely managing my time as best as I can to create more time, to create more products and more content. And so it hasn't been perfect yet, and I don't think it ever will be. And I think that's a big piece of productivity and time management and project management that you have to accept, is that, you know, you're never going to stick to the plan 100%, and that's okay. The goal is to create a plan that's like reasonable, but also flexible. So for me, I know as of the time of this recording that I want to release a piece, I want to release a video blog post once a week. And for me, that's Tuesdays. And then on Thursdays, I want to do a live stream in my Facebook group. And ideally, that live stream could be repurposed. Like, I could attach it to an old blog post, or maybe it'll be relevant in the future because I know the next blog post I'm going to write 3 weeks from now, that'll be a video I can drop in there. So just trying to think as repurposable as possible. But also, I've changed my YouTube strategy. When I first started doing YouTube, I was doing really, really, really high quality. I had the DSLR. I had a bunch of lights. I was reading from, or not reading, I was memorizing a script and reciting it, and I had a video editor. And I think it was a beautiful product, but I had to reevaluate the time commitment that it took to do that. And it was too much. It was just, I couldn't maintain a weekly video to that caliber. For me right now. Maybe one day I can. Right now, with client work the way it is and trying to devote time on a higher ROI thing, like an actual paid product, I'm having to be more strict with those decisions. So even if I want it to be to that caliber, right now it's not. Right now it's my Logitech webcam, me at my desk, one light behind it, and I'm editing it. And I'm trying to record it in a way and edit in a way where it takes less time, where it's okay if it's not perfect. It's okay if it doesn't have the best graphics or the exact lighting that I wish it did. I'm trying to just realize that it's still good enough. It's good enough audio. It's good enough video. The content is great. And I'm getting more content out more regularly, as opposed to stopping because I couldn't keep up with that higher level. So it's been a lot of strategic decisions like that, that again, like I've also been trying to just try it out. I was like, I don't know if anyone will even watch a video if it's not as high quality as the original ones. So I decided to try it, and turns out no one has made a comment about it. You know, everyone seems okay. So
I mean, I'm still watching them, and I don't notice it anything major. So
yeah. Okay. I don't have a beautiful candle behind me maybe, but no, it's been just a strategic realization and really, really prioritizing and looking at where I could spend my time. I would say earlier this year, I would spend a ton of time on my business, but it was all in content creation and none of it was in product creation, which is good. You need content creation, but you need to have a product to sell. And so it's kind of realizing that, okay, if I have, you know, 6 hours a week that I could feasibly record something, you know, what do I have to cut out to make that happen? Or 2 hours a week, you know, okay, well, then that means I'm going to have to make other things fit around it. So I guess I haven't gotten too nitty gritty with you yet, but at a higher level, I'm just trying to be really streamlined and really focused and not get distracted with all the ideas I have. And I definitely have a ton of ideas, but it's been cool to say, this is my plan for the next 2 months. All of these other amazing things will happen. They're just not going to happen right now. I'm not going to worry about a evergreen funnel right now. Like, I just need to get the product out there first. Then I can come back later and make it a funnel if I want, you know, or different things like that. So I use the spreadsheets, of course, to kind of plan out. But I love planning in Asana. That's where I am 99.9% of the time. And that's how I actually get the goals and tasks done. I might map them out elsewhere to like kind of get the framework. But in Asana, that's where I have every single piece of content, has all the tasks and the due dates. And I have a process for what day of the week I do certain things. So, you know, if I'm going to be recording a video for a piece of content, that's going to be on a Wednesday. If I'm going to be recording a video for like a product, then that's going to be on a Thursday. And I try to not take meetings with anyone on Mondays if I can help it. And so it's definitely kind of having those block schedules and creating some consistency. And then truly, it's just building it out in Asana for me and getting it done and staying focused. And it's not always perfect. Some days are better than others. but I'm finding myself the more, like you were talking about earlier, consistency is key, not only with content creation and your business, but as a human being. Like the more you do something consistently, the easier it becomes. Like the first time I was like, okay, Wednesday and Thursday mornings are like recording time, and one will be, you know, for courses and one will be for free content. That was like so hard the first week, because I was like, oh, but I need to be writing something during this time, or oh, I could research this or go through this course. You know, I had to like tell myself, no, this is on the calendar. If you don't do this now, your whole project plan is going to fall behind. Let's do it now. And now that I've been doing that for a few weeks, I like know, okay, Wednesday morning, like, nope, can't do that. That's when I'm recording. Or like Thursday morning, that's dedicated, you know, course creation time or live stream or whatever you're doing. So I don't know. I don't know if that's helpful at all, but no, that's the evolution I've been going through.
Well, I mean, I appreciate your candidness and talking about the transition that you're in right now. And when you're saying all these things, I'm like, yeah, I just want to keep pointing people. They need to go binge watch your YouTube videos, because I was going to say another thing too, was the Google Calendar ideal day.
I live by that.
Amazing. I forwarded it to so many people, and I'm like, I had to rewatch some of it, not because of the way that you presented it, but just because it is a little bit technical if you're working in Google and all that stuff. But
oh yeah,
it was so fun to plan out, okay, what would a typical week? And then you start really thinking about, you know, what days of the week do you want content creation based on when things launch? And then how do you create space to do X, Y, and Z? And it really helps you figure out when you want to start doing those things. And I know you do have a YouTube video about your 5 favorite apps, but in case any of those have changed, I'm curious, maybe what are your top 3 to 5 apps or software tools or things that you use on a daily basis that really help you stay focused and then optimize your productivity?
Totally. So Asana, which we've mentioned a few times here already. It's a project management system. If you haven't heard of it, I probably should have told you that earlier in this interview if you haven't heard of it, but it's a project management system. It's completely free. You can upgrade, but you don't really need to. Asana is hands down, that's where I live and breathe. That's things aren't getting done unless it's in Asana. And that's how I know when I need to sit down and start working, like I come to Asana. So definitely Asana, and that was in that YouTube video. It has stayed and has proven its worth. Even though I've totally tried, you know, over the years of having a business, I've tried other systems, and Asana is just perfect for me. And now that it can do boards as well, if you are more a visual person where you kind of need to see the cards, you know, a more Trello style project management view, Asana can do that now too. So it's so cool to kind of use both lists and boards based on what you are organizing. So definitely Asana would be app number one. App number two for me is Google Drive and all that comes with it, Google Sheets, Google Docs, Google Calendar, Gmail. Larger, it's called G Suite. But Google Drive specifically is where you organize all of your electronic files, and you can share files with your team. And I just love Google Drive. I get a weird amount of joy from having organized files and knowing exactly where things are and knowing which folders are shared with my team and which ones aren't. And it just helps me know that I'm not losing anything in my business, because I'm not making a note in my phone. I'm not writing it on a sticky note. Like, I'm scanning it and putting it into Google Drive, or I'm saving a PDF into Google Drive, or I'm opening a Google Doc to capture some ideas or notes. You know, it's kind of nice to just know that it's all in one place like that. So I'd say those are the top two, hands down. And then one of the ones I mentioned, that video that I still love, it's a iPhone app. You can also open it up on your browser as well. It's called Brain FM. And I love listening to music when I work. But if I put on Spotify or any playlist that has words, Spotify is a great playlist without words too, if you want to check that out. But I love listening to music, but if it has words, I get distracted. Or I just can't really focus as much. Maybe I'm still focused, but I can tell I'm not as deeply focused as I am when I have something like Brain FM on. And I actually sleep with it on too, because they have different settings. They have like a sleep playlist and a nap playlist and then a focus playlist. Wow. And you can like choose different ones. So I sleep with like the rain. It's like sleep and I click rain and then like 8 hours then I go to sleep. So it's kind of nice to use it all day, every day for different things. But I definitely use the focus playlist. Like when I'm trying to write or outline or plan or think at a deeper level and stay really focused, that app helps me so much because it just like, you know, I have put my headphones on and I just don't really notice the world around me as much. So I would say those top three are my top three. Yeah.
I got to check that Brain FM thing out.
I think I ended up paying for it because there's like, AppSumo did a lifelong deal with it, but you don't have to pay for it at all. They have like a pretty extensive free trial. But I did, and I use it literally all day, every day, like I said. So it's been worth every penny for me. And then I'd say Slack as well, which is a, you know, an online chat system basically where you can chat with your team and clients. So if you're a service provider, it's amazing to have your client communication in Slack instead of in your email because we all hate emails. So It's so nice. And I've also found I've worked with several different teams in it. It's so nice because it really has that chat feel. So I feel like I get to know the people I'm working with so much better than if we were just emailing back and forth without having to necessarily hop on calls all the time. So I absolutely adore Slack. Those are definitely my top four.
Are you going to do a video about how to organize your inbox?
You know, here's the
process of it.
Yeah. The sad truth is I stink at inbox management. I don't know why. Like, I think I can do everything else, but organizing my own email, I think it's one of those things where you can do things for someone else and not yourself. Like I can manage someone else's inbox, but somehow mine gets ignored. So my wonderful assistant does my inbox, thankfully. So I will not be doing a video on that unless she's the one teaching it. But unfortunately, no. So I can't help you there.
No,
I'll help you every other way
I
can. Those are my top four. I mean, I could list a million other apps, but honestly, if we're just trying to stay focused, the fifth thing I would say is not even truly an app. They do make apps for it, but it's the Pomodoro method, which I talk about in my Plan Your Day video, which you mentioned. The Pomodoro method is how I actually get things done and move at a quicker pace and feel accomplished at the end of my day. Because I think the hardest feeling, and I'm sure we've all felt it, is when you end your day and you're like, I worked so hard all day, but like, what did I accomplish? I don't know. So the Pomodoro method I love is, if you haven't heard of it, it's you work for 25 minutes and then you take a 5-minute break. And then and that's called one Pomodoro. And every time you do like four, you should take a longer break. So a lot of times people will say an hour. And I'll be totally honest, I don't necessarily follow that exact schedule perfectly. Like I might take a 2-minute break and then a 10-minute break, you know. But I think what's more important is that 25 minutes where I'm focused. I actually have an app that I use, but 9 times out of 10 now, I use a kitchen timer. I think because it's physical and it sits on my desk and I see it and I don't necessarily have to look at my phone, which can be a source of distraction.
Ooh,
I can actually just see this kitchen timer and it's like it's so not technical, but for some reason it works for me more. So I'll actually set a kitchen timer for 25 minutes. And the feeling I get when I start a Pomodoro, it's like I truly ignore everything else. You know, when you sit down to work and you're like, I should mute my phone or not open Facebook or whatever. But it's like when you're starting a Pomodoro, it's like, okay, yeah, I'm closing Slack. I am turning off notifications. The phone's getting muted. You know, it's like 25 minutes where I'm like intentionally ignoring what's happening. And I get so much done. And you're also kind of racing the clock a little bit because you probably, what I like to do is anticipate how many Pomodoros it's going to take me to get something done.
Yeah.
So if I need to like outline this new course, maybe I say that'll take me 3 Pomodoros, whatever it feels like it needs to take. That's how I'll plan my day. Like I'll plan my day around, okay, that's, you know, how an hour and a half basically. So that's all I can devote to this today. And if I want to get this done, then I need to get this done in 3 Pomodoros. So
I love that.
It like kind of just builds on itself. And that's how, when it comes to actually getting things done and not just planning and putting things on the calendar, but actually doing it, the Pomodoro method is like my life. So you can get phone apps if that helps. You can do a kitchen timer. I also have It's called a productivity planner. I actually don't use real paper planners anymore when it comes to like scheduling. I'm all electronic, but this paper physical planner called a productivity planner, which you can find out more if you go to intelligentchange.com. It's so cool. It's all built around the Pomodoro method. So they have like little circles next to each task in a little box where you say, I think this will take 3 Pomodoros. And then as you're doing it, you fill in the circles for each Pomodoro and you can see how long it actually takes you. And then you make a note of that. And so that's when I plan out my day going out of Google Calendar. I like put, okay, here are the 3 tasks I'm going to do today. And this is how many Pomodoros they're each going to take. And that'll be in front of me all day to actually really as a source of reminding and like motivation. And it becomes this really cool visual cue for me where even just seeing it open on my desk is like, oh yeah, I need to be focused. Or like, oh yeah, no, I'm not working on this today. You know, I'll do that tomorrow. Or I can do that after I finish these 3 things. So I don't know, anything like that that can kind of help remind you of what you're trying to accomplish, and taking the time to plan that out in advance is super helpful.
Yeah, that's amazing. I know I've seen the productivity planner because they're the same group that makes the 5-minute journal.
I love that too.
Yeah. It's amazing. So I'll have to maybe dig into that. I'm like 3 months into using the bullet journal, and so far I enjoy the bullet journal.
Oh, good. You know, I mean, the foundation, and I say this a lot, but the foundation of systems and productivity and all that good stuff, it really boils down to you just need to find a system that works for you. Mm-hmm. And if you find that, then stop trying to fix what isn't broken. Because I know so many people, like you just said, you love the bullet journal. So like, if you love the bullet journal, then like, great. Like, who cares about trying the productivity planner or testing out this other thing? You know, not that you shouldn't explore, and personal development's great, but I think a lot of times we end up like trying to fix things that aren't really even broken yet. Like, mm-hmm. if you use Trello and you love Trello and you're productive, just because I'm talking about Asana right now doesn't mean you should like drop everything and, you know, do Asana. Because honestly, if Trello's working for you and you feel like it meets all of your needs, your team is high functioning, you're super productive, you know where everything is, then chances are you're probably good to go.
Right.
Now, if you want to, I have great resources on Asana, but like you know what I mean? Like, I think we fall prey to that shiny object syndrome and trying to, you know, make things better, but really the system you have like might be working.
Yeah, that's what I just interviewed. I did a mini interview with the gal who is speaking on accounting for the summit. And she's like, honestly, like people always ask me like, what system is the best? And she goes, whatever accounting, like bookkeeping system you're going to use is the best. So
yes,
just
so
whatever
true.
Is like, whatever's going to work for you. So, okay. To land the plane, I always ask this, what's been one of your favorite books?
Oh God, I have so many books. I love reading books. Okay. I need to like turn around and look at my bookshelf. It's behind me, unfortunately. So one of the books that I read recently, I'm going to probably skew more towards recent books. It's called She Means Business, and it's by
Carrie Green.
Carrie. Yes.
Yeah.
And I actually bought this book when she first released it, and it had been on my bookshelf and I hadn't read it. And I went to Mexico in July for a week off, and that was one of the books I took with me. And I am so glad I read it. It was so good. And especially if you're listening and you're maybe not that you have to be just starting out, because I'm not, but it is, I wish I had read it when I was just starting. And she just gives so much insight, and it's easy to read, and it's funny, and it's actionable. And I just absolutely adored it. And while I was reading it is when I was really deep into figuring out this evolution. I was kind of in that part where you don't know where you're going to go, but you're trying to figure it out. And I thought that book was so helpful to get kind of guide me through that process. And it was just a great read. So highly recommend reading it if you haven't. Mm. And then give me 1 second while I look at all my books. Okay. Again, I have so many. I would say the next one, it's another one of those where I wish I had read it sooner, was Profit First.
Yes.
Love it. Like, I read it recently and I was like, this is like the Bible of business finances. Why didn't I know about this before? And it just answers so many questions. I don't know. I loved it. Highly, highly, highly recommend. Also for life, like not just business, but yeah. You've read it?
Yeah, I like, I'm a massive fan of Mike Michalowicz and the book, just because, and I agree with you, when I first started back in 2012 doing independent consulting, like the money fluctuated month to month. And the great thing about what he does in Profit First is you assign percentages, not actual dollar amounts. And then you can work back and say like, oh, if I want to bring in X amount of dollars per month, if I want to pay myself X amount of dollars per month, and that's 50% of what I pay myself from the business, then that means I need to make up twice that in order to cover taxes, operating, and all that stuff. So it's a really great book that just totally, yeah, I'm with you. It's definitely.
I know neither of those are like productivity or systems related per se, but I just thought they were so good. And there's so many great books out there. I feel like I just pick up a new one every week and it's just amazing. But I'd say the ones that had the most impact on me recently were those two. I'll give you a third one. I read this like a year ago probably, and it was You Are a Badass by Jen. I think you say her last name. Yeah, I didn't know how to pronounce it. I loved that book. I have friends that read it that didn't love it as much as me, but a lot of people I know loved it, but just loved it. It was such a like kick in the butt, but like super encouraging and like called you out. I love books that make me more self-aware. Mm-hmm. And I felt like reading that book, I was way more self-aware. Like I would catch myself when I would like have a certain thought or I don't know. Highly recommend that book too.
She's awesome. She actually came on the podcast and her interview launched yesterday.
No way.
Yeah.
I'm gonna listen to that as soon as we're off.
Yeah. She's super. I mean, it's so funny. And I was interviewed on another podcast and they're like, you ever have a fangirl moment for someone you interview? And I'm like, yeah, actually I had that probably a couple of weeks ago when I interviewed Jen Sincero. I never usually get nervous before I get on a podcast interview because it's just having a conversation and being curious. But with Jen, I was like, oh my gosh, like,
this I would is have done crazy. The same thing.
Like, you're a New York Times bestseller and I get to chat with you. This is awesome. But yeah, I agree. That book is a fantastic. I really want to read her other one about You Are a Badass, the one with like specific to money.
And yes, just, I do too.
And see what that's about. But oh my goodness, this has been awesome. Megan, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. I cannot wait to have you in Chicago in what, a month and a half or so?
Oh my gosh, I can't wait. I've never been to Chicago, so I'm so excited to see the city, and you'll have to give me some recommendations for where I should eat. Yeah. But it's going to be so much fun. And I'm so excited to meet all the other speakers and everyone that comes to the workshop too. I think it's going to be a blast.
Yeah, it'll definitely be fun. So tell us one more time where the listeners can find more information out about you.
Oh, head over to meganmins.com and you'll find some of the videos that we talked about today, as well as some of the resources I have for you guys. But that's my home base. So definitely go to meganmins.com.
Yay. Okay. Thank you so much, Megan. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me. I can't wait to see you soon in Chicago.
Yeah.
Thanks for tuning in to the She Did It Her Way podcast. Did you like this episode? Head on over to iTunes.com to leave us a rating and a review. We would love to hear from you. And don't forget to check out SheDidItHerWayPodcast.com, where you can subscribe to our email list so you can receive the inside scoop on our latest episode released each Monday. Now, do us a favor and go make it a great week.